It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here! Tonight, let us make them remember. We are not afraid!
Oh, Thunderstruck here on Declare Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock, here in beautiful Arizona from the BEA beautiful studios of Freedoms with an S, freedomsphoenix.com. Now we're doing our series on leading up into the Freedom Summit. Guess who we got coming? Oh, well, he looks like Brad Pitt. It's Stu Crone. Stu Crone is going to be speaking. He's been a longtime friend of Mark Victor and I. And in fact, the first Freedom Summit that we had was with Stu Crone as one of the three partners. We started off with Stu, and he's like, hey, man, you guys might wind up in jail. You know what? You guys can do that without me. So what happened is Stu has been a big security internet woo-hoo. Can we say some of the companies that you've worked for, Stu?
Yes.
Go ahead and let's give your bio. I mean, you're Mr. Secret. I mean, it's, you know, that's why we're always, you know, we're doing the Brad Pitt thing. You know, it's like, this is what I look like, as far as you know.
So, as far as you know.
So go ahead and give us your resume, and then we'll talk about some of the things that you've been scaring us with for a decade. Because I remember when we first started having presentations, you know, Mark would have an annual event that he would have for a lot of his clients and other attorneys and judges and so on, and you would speak at. And then we started doing the Freedom Summits and so on. And on a regular basis, you come in and said, let me tell you what's coming. Well, it's here. So go ahead and give your bio, man.
So I've worked for a number of large multinational companies such as AT&T, Thomson Financial, Credit Suisse, not Credit Suisse in the U.S., but actually over in Switzerland, and a number of banks and financial industries and whatnot. And I've spent many years doing software development, database design, information security, computer forensics, and moving more and more into the security space, doing, you know, serious information security, communication security, and forensics.
And the forensics, I mean, there's been some of the history on, you know, Mark using you in criminal defense cases to where we need somebody to look at the hard drive and see what really happened. Because there's a trail when you got the man wanting to add some stuff in there and you go, I see what you did.
Yes, exactly. So we can actually open up the system, take a look at the hard drive, pull it out, analyze it, and see what's really going on, and recover a lot of information that people never really realized would even be on there.
Well, go ahead and tell us what some of the things that you predicted 10 years ago and what we have to look forward to now. Because I'm telling you, a lot of the people, if you have not heard Stu Crone speak, and he's going to be at this year's Freedom Summit, freedomsummit.com. And those of you that are listening, make sure when you go register that you pick student. So you get the discounted price. It's $175, you know, for those that know to select a student, and you save a bunch of money. Now, Stu's going to be there, and he's going to scare us, but let's go ahead and go back to where you were, you know, giving us what for back in the day, and you were saying, you know, this is what you need to worry about, and then it came to pass. Go ahead and talk about it a little bit.
So there are actually a number of predictions that I made 10 years ago that unfortunately have come to pass. One of them was red light surveillance cameras. Under the guise of putting cameras in intersections, what we found is that the cameras actually record continuous video and have the entire intersection under continuous surveillance. So everyone walking, driving, even if they're not engaged in any sort of criminal activity, is being continuously surveilled.
Okay, now how do they use that? I mean, you know, it's continuous surveillance of these video cameras like we had here in Arizona on the freeways and so on. You know, a lot of people thought that they were just snapshots. Well,
right.
You know, you were warning, and it became common knowledge later here in Arizona that, look, these aren't snapshots. They're continual video surveillance that's being archived. And how would they use that kind of information?
Well, you see, one of the other predictions I made was that they're going to start pulling this data together with transaction data from credit cards, from banking transactions, from drive-thrus, from restaurants, and start building an image of your entire life story, your history, your travels. And in fact, there are several initiatives underway around the world to do this in all public places.
You know, I remember there was a program that they had to where officers would go around parking lots and they would just scan license plates, and then all of a sudden, boom, hey man, doesn't have insurance, this guy's registration's not current, there's a warrant out for him, something, and they were able to issue tickets just by driving through parking lots, even though they're private parking lots. And I remember after you had talked about this at the summit, there's a good friend of mine that worked for another IT internet place, and he remembers having human resources coming to them, having a meeting of all the employees, and they said this. They go, if you're from out of state and you moved here and you have an out-of-state drive license plate on your vehicle out there, because a lot of people, they moved, or they really live somewhere else, or they only part-time reside here, or they didn't want to have to pay the high taxes and they're from a state that to register their car, it was cheaper. They go, look, the government has come to us because we have a big parking lot with lots of money out there. Mm-hmm. So what they did is they said, look, we're going to go through and start scanning all these, and if we find that they have an Arizona address, we're going to issue them citations for not registering their vehicles. But the company had to give them permission to come on their private property to do this. And, of course, they gave it. Well, right. My friend Gary, he's like going, whoa, 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 whoa. Anybody know what's going on here? Explain that to us.
So, essentially, if you think about it, what they're saying is, we're going to look at your license plate. We're going to run it and find out if you have an Arizona address. Now, if you have an out-of-state license plate, obviously that license plate is registered to an out-of-state address. So how would they know if you have an in-state address as well? Well, obviously what they're doing is they've pulled together all of these databases. They're looking at real estate databases. They've pulled them all together, and now they're cross-referencing them. The mere fact that they're able to do that lookup shows that they've tied these databases together. They're driving through, and obviously most large companies are engaged in regulated activities, meaning you buy things interstate, you have a local business license, you may handle toxic waste, you need trash permits, you need fire inspections, you need building permits. There's a lot of pressure that can be put on medium to large companies by the local government to encourage them to allow the police to drive through private parking lots. And so basically from what we're seeing here, it's obvious they've already tied these databases together, and that's what they're doing. They're running the plates and scanning them. They also do that, by the way, on the interstates. DPS has cars that have infrared plate readers that as you're driving will snapshot your plate, automatically run it, and look for hits.
Wow. I can't remember what the program was called. What they did is it was called, I don't remember. But what it was is that there is a person of interest database. If they put in a name, anything associated with that name, which would be your license plate as you're driving around on the highway, it would go back and look for every hit that they had on these continuous video surveillance of the speeding cameras. They weren't cameras. They were continuous video. So tell us what you know about that. Oh, that's a good thing to hit on. Yeah, that's right. You're going to have to wait for the answer on that one. Stu Crone, IT extraordinaire, forensics in court, taking care of big like Intel, protecting them from the evil hacker guys out there. The boy has got skills. We'll be right back here on Declare Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock, and Stu Crone talking about That was just what he was saying before we had to worry about. What do we got to worry about now?
And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Welcome back to Declare Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock, and a lot of my great friends on, including my very special guest this hour with Stu Crone. Now, Stu Crone, he's party. He's party. Yeah, ain't he party? You know, yeah, we got the pictures up. We're doing the video and everything. Yeah, Brad Pitt. I mean, why'd you choose Brad Pitt? If you're going to be all secret and everything, you just figured, you know, he was closest to look like you. Is that it?
Pretty much.
Yeah.
Needed a picture. I figured, you know, we're almost twins, so I would just use the photo that we had then.
You know, the one thing I wanted to go ahead and get an answer to that question we promised people is what are the programs or the databases that they are loading this up to? Because I remember there being a discussion in things like the enemy of the state with Gene Hackman and Will Smith, and they were saying, look, man, you know, this was 10-15 years ago they did that movie, at least 10 years ago, and they were saying, look, man, 10 years before that they had acres of servers that they were accumulating all this data on us already. Well, that was then, and this is now, and I'm and you ask, well, why are they collecting all this data of every single license plate that goes by these cameras on the freeway? And my answer always is because they can.
Right.
And this is what you can talk about is how can they? I mean, what is, you know, who are we dealing with? What is the agencies that are doing this?
So the scary thing is it's not just agencies anymore. The intelligence budget in the United States that we can determine is over $80 billion a year, which is a whole lot of zeros. Decades ago, the federal government had acres of computers, literally acres of computers, set up, scanning information, pulling it in, and monitoring it. That was decades ago. Now, the NSA recently had to build a listening center out in Utah because they realized that had they built the center near Washington, where their other listening center is, the Washington, D.C. metro grid could not provide enough electricity to run their servers.
Wow.
You understand the scale I'm talking about? The electric grid could not provide enough electricity. It would have taxed out the grid.
Oh, man. They need to go green, shut them down, know what I mean?
Yeah, no kidding. So the scale of the information they're bringing in, the scale of the information monitoring that they're doing is absolutely extraordinary. They're basically sucking in everything. There was a newspaper article a little while ago. A guy was on the phone with his bank teller and casually remarked to her, hey, you know, don't go to downtown Portland. They're doing some kind of a nuclear weapons drill or something, a fake emergency FEMA kind of thing. And he got a visit from the Secret Service. So he called his bank back and said, hey, you know, why did you call the police? And they're like, oh, no, we didn't call them. It would be against our rules and regulations. He spoke to the bank manager. They're like, no, we can't call them. They were just listening in on the line. They were just monitoring all of the phone lines, looking for keywords, picked it up and went and spoke to them. So they're literally sucking in everything. So the question you have to ask yourself is why? Even though it's, you know, because they can, why are they interested? Why are they interested in casual conversations between someone and his banker? My opinion is there's something far more nefarious going on. They're pulling in this information because they want total information awareness and total control.
Man, I'll tell you what my concern is that they get all this information, but how do they, I don't know, examine it or evaluate it? I give you a good point. I remember that we had, I couldn't find it. It kind of like got scrubbed even from Freedom's Phoenix. And it was a PDF of a report that was done years ago, back in 05, 06, when we first started Freedom's Phoenix. And what they talked about is they accumulate all this data at the NSA, but you still have to have human beings kind of evaluate it or what data points are important and so on. So what they did is they created kind of a 3D topographical holographic sitting in front of your map. And if a name came up like, you know, mine or yours or something, or Osama bin what forgotten or whatever came up, and you would have this big peak there. Well, they go and they look at it. Oh, this is differentiation between the rest of the population, so we need to take a look at it. So they go and they look at it and they say, oh, it's just Ernie being a butthead, whatever. Okay, we got to retweak it and change it to where people like that kind of don't cause peaks anymore. Well, then all they did is they created a new level. Well, then you have topographical holographic images coming back that look like big giant mesas out in Monument Valley or something. The entire country, what would have been a peak that got noticed on someone, then the entire country is that. It's like this TSA thing. Everybody's complaining. Okay. If they're complaining about TSA, they don't differentiate from the rest of the population. Sooner or later, you get to a 3D graphic image that comes out that looks like what would have been, you know, 200% above the baseline for everybody. Now everybody's up there. So how do you differentiate the real terrorist from everybody mad? You see my point?
Well, part of it is they're not. Part of it is they're actually investigating people. There was a case in England where a woman was on the phone to a friend and said that her daughter bombed in the school play, and she ended up investigated and put on a no-fly list for a while. So they're not very good at sorting out stuff like that. The idea would be to study the context. And obviously, who's saying it is important? You know, if the person has a criminal background, if the person is a known member of a violent group, you know, those are the people that, you know, they would want bubbling up to the top. If the person is, you know, someone like you or me that talks about this stuff all the time, you'd want it being pushed down and ignored. And so ideally, their algorithms should bring up the people most likely to be doing things and looking at context. So in other words, if you just say, you know, something bombed, that should be a fairly low peak. If you're talking about like bomb, TATP, and airplane and TSA in the same sentence, that should be a much, much higher peak. However, they're not doing a very good job at filtering out the real threats from the non-real threats. But there's an incentive for them not to filter them out. Think of school drug testing, right? Company comes in, tests all the kids in a school or tests all the people in a company, and they get false positives. It behooves them to have false positives so they can say, look, there's a problem. Fund us some more. If they go in and they say, okay, they're all negative, there's no problem, you're not going to call them back next year. It's the same thing with the government. It behooves them to have false positives.
Oh, this is the kind of things that we're going to hear about from Stu Crone at the Freedom Summit, freedomsummit.com. And make sure you go and you check student so you get the discount. You know, Stu, I all the goodies that you're going to be able to share with us this year, are we going to be more scared?
You're definitely going to be quite a bit more scared.
Is there really any way to protect ourselves? I mean, I know you like, you know, not putting your image up and so on, you know, because you don't want to help them. But it's. But I'm wondering what it is that we're going to be having to do. I mean, Google, we had them coming out saying everybody's going to have to change their name when they become of age.
Yeah, I think Eric Schmidt's crazy. What he's saying that literally doesn't even make sense. It's completely ridiculous.
Well, we're going to find out what we need to do from Stu Crone at the Freedom Summit this year. Hey, Stu, it's going to be great to see you again, man. Absolutely. Thanks for coming on.
Absolutely. I'm looking forward to it.
We'll be right back here on Declare Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock, in just a little bit. You guys stay right there.
It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock.
Welcome back to Declare Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock, here from Phoenix, Arizona, IA, from the beautiful studios of Freedoms with an S, freedomsphoenix.com. Our guest this half hour is Scott Horton from antiwar.com. Now, Scott is a good, hardcore, no-compromise individual that's going to be another speaker at freedomsummit.com. And make sure everybody knows, you know, if you're listening to this broadcast or you see the ads on Antiwar or you get it on Daily Paul, you go in there, you register, you pick student. Gives you a big discount. Big discount. And we're going to have Scott Horton talking to us about, you know, what are you going to be sharing with us, Scott?
Well, I don't know if you had wanted me to give a speech on a particular topic or just say whatever I wanted or what. Ernie, you tell me.
You know, the thing is that what we do with all the speakers is generally we have an idea. I mean, of course, you're not going to be talking about gardening. But, you know, if we set it now, we could have invaded Iran by then. So, you know, the thing is we always kind of wait till the last 10 days before the summit before we start putting it up. But what are some of the things that you'd like to share with us you want to be sure to talk about?
Well, I guess my general idea, I haven't really sort of written anything out or anything, but my general idea was just to perhaps maybe go through a little bit of history and just explain about how, because all of the wars are illegitimate, they are all surrounded, of course, in lies, because they have to somehow get us to at least somewhat agree that they mean well, at least, even if we disagree with how they're going about something, that, you know, there's something important, you know, like those commies attacked us in the Gulf of Tonkin, and now we're just defending ourselves, or, you know, Saddam Hussein's agents gave anthrax to Mohammed Atta, or you know, whatever kind of nonsense to get us to support the quite evil policies of, you know, what a libertarian considers warfare to be simply just mass murder. The government is not doesn't operate under any separate rules of morality than we do, just separate rules of law, I guess. And so that would be my thing, I think, would probably just to, you know, to sum it up, the war party is full of it. Everything they say is a lie, and that's because everything that they're up to is evil. And so they've got to convince you to believe in nonsense in order to go along or to let them basically get away with what it is that they get away with. And really, it's the same thing on the domestic level. Everything that the state says is a bunch of madness, but a bunch of nonsense. But particularly on the wars, and the consequences from the wars, of course, are the worst of all for everyone.
Well, you know, one thing that I haven't had time to do the research on it, and I was hoping you'd be able to help me with, was the some kind of deal the State Department or Department of Defense had in the Middle East with Israel getting a bunch of F-35s or something. You know anything about that? What's going on there?
Well, I don't know. If you read the Fort Worth Star-Telegram today, good luck to the Israelis flying them, because they're going to be falling out of the sky. They're, these things, according to the Fort Worth Star-Telegram, it's the most expensive weapon system ever is the F-35. At they call it high $300 billion, and the main engine casing has got cracks all over it, and that's from a test on the ground, not even a test flight. They say that this part was designed for 8,000 hours of flight. They've done a ground test up to 1,200 something hours, and all of a sudden their instruments went haywire because the darn thing's falling apart. This plane that we don't even need, that we never needed. I was just yelling and screaming about this on my own radio show a minute ago. We got all the F-18 Hornets and all the F-16s, all the F-15s and 14s, and all our Warthogs and all our every kind of fighter that could be imagined that are more than a match for any Air Force in the world. If we had to take on Europe with our own planes, we'd beat them, Ernie. And it's just madness to think that we have to spend these hundreds, literally hundreds of billions of dollars on planes to fight the Soviet Union that were designed back in the 80s for fighting the Soviet Union that hasn't existed for a generation now. The F-35 has got to be the biggest case study in, you know, special interest politics. You know, just you know, who needs a Cold War? Nobody but Lockheed, and so we have one.
Wow, the idea that we're amping it up and arming for World War III doesn't make me feel any better. And so, what do you think? One of the things that you can share, and is there any positive aspects of society from antiwar.com that's going on? Or are people rising up? Are they rising up, or are they just you know,
well,
getting ready for the next
wave? Antiwar.com. I don't know. I hope they're all rising up in their own way. Honestly, Ernie, the way I look at it is that, and you know, I don't mean to speak for the rest of everybody who participates in making antiwar.com what it is, but just my own view is that all my best efforts can't really, and maybe they could, you know, pie in the sky kind of thing, but mostly I don't believe that what I say or do could really change the course of history or what happens, whether a certain war breaks out or not. But I do believe in the power of changing people's minds, and I know that there are individuals who, you know, have benefited So I look at it that way, changing the course of history of one person at a time. But then again, like you said, I'm a no-compromise individualist like that.
Well, what we have here in Arizona tomorrow, Dr. Paul's coming, and it's going to be a really big show with the at ASU. He's going to be at the Phoenician doing a fundraiser. He's going to be it might be that he and Rand might be able to bring something to the attention of the American people and free a lot more minds. I mean, what are you seeing is going to happen in 2012? Is it just another speaking tour?
Well, I wouldn't put it like that. I mean, if it is a speaking tour, it's not just one. It's the greatest one ever coming up. And that's what happened in 2007 and 2008 with that Ron Paul revolution. I know it was you and your people that coined that phrase and pushed that meme, Ernie, and I thank you for that. But that was the greatest speaking tour on behalf of peace and liberty in the history of all mankind. There's nothing that compares to it. There are meetup groups in Russia, meetup groups all over the old world, all over the United States of America. And I think the most important thing about it, and I've said this a million times, is that Ron Paul handed people a permission slip to be anti-war. And he said, look, I know TV has told y'all that, he didn't say this, but that this is the role that he played was, TV says that if you're anti-war, then you're like Michael Moore. And a lot of you people don't want to be Michael Moore. Well, here, you can be anti-war and be like Ron Paul, Texas Republican. And, you know, and people went, great. I don't have to be an America-hating liberal whatever, in order to oppose this imperial foreign policy. And that is the greatest contribution to me that Ron has made. And, of course, all the new Austrian theory economists in the world and a lot of young new anarchists and libertarians. And the thing is, as you remember, Ernie, in 2007 when Ron announced he was running for president, he did it on Washington Journal on C-SPAN at 6 o'clock in the morning. And the only people who knew about him was people like you and me, and, you know, one guy per neighborhood in every neighborhood in America really knew that there's this one good congressman, but it wasn't widespread knowledge. And now look at where he's starting from. He's world famous. He's the most famous congressman from the House of Representatives in decades, probably. I don't know. He's got a massive amount of influence. They can't help but invite him on TV because even though the establishment doesn't really like what he says, he's such a kind old guy, and so they invite him on all the TV channels all the time. They don't have to really learn from him, but they listen to him. And he's going to be starting from a much higher position of, I guess, fame, for lack of a better term, this time around. So, man, I hope he runs. And if he does, I can, you know, pretty much assure you that the Republican Party of taxation and tyranny and death and lies is not going to give him the nomination. There's no amount of you know, Democratic power that could bum rush those primaries and make him the Republican nominee. I don't believe it for a minute. But it'll be the greatest speaking tour on behalf of peace and liberty in the history of all mankind again, reprise. And it's going to be something incredible. I mean, I saw where just a few weeks ago, while he's, you know, just won, the election season just kind of wound up, he just was reelected to Congress and whatever, and he gave this speech at the University of something or other over there in the Midwest, and 7,000 people came. Ernie, I mean, man, this thing is going to be huge. I'm so excited about it. And no, I don't believe that, you know, the path to victory for liberty is through politics. To me, it's all about speeches.
Yeah, no, I don't want to diminish it by saying just a speaking tour, but you know, that's what it is. It's a speaking tour where we get to learn a lot more about it. We'll talk about it more with my good friend Scott Horton from antiwar.com/radio here in just a little bit.
Freedom's the answer. What's the question? You're listening to Ernest Hancock.
Independence of me, Ernest Hancock, and my good friend Scott Horton from antiwar.com/radio. You know, the one thing I want to make sure that we understand is that this is a cultural battle. All the other stuff, the vote totals and candidates that run and coverage, that's a side effect of people just knowing better. And with the internet now, all of a sudden, everything has changed. And while we're talking, Scott, we're producing the video, I have a camera on War is Over If You Want It, Happy Christmas from John and Yoko. And I talked about this one time on my show about this cultural shift that John Lennon and Yoko Ono were trying to accomplish in the early 70s. And it was very important to me to understand what it was they were trying to. Of course, the media tried to poo-poo them, and the military-industrial complex and the Nixon administration wanted to get rid of them and deport them, all this other stuff. And the reason was is that he was getting people to think that, you know, we don't have to be at war all the time. War is over. And then in small print, if you want it. Well, a listener sent me an original copy of one of the postcards, and I had it framed, and I put it up, and we've been showing it, and some people have been sending me emails, and they go, what is that? You know what? I'm going, oh, that's an original from the campaign. Well, that's what antiwar.com, antiwar.com/radio, Scott Horden's program, a lot of what we do here, is all about changing the mindset, the culture, so that you can even contemplate that peace is possible. Give peace a chance. All we are saying. I mean, this is the role that antiwar.com has. And I wanted to give you an opportunity to promote antiwar.com. And you're in a fundraiser right now. So go ahead and give your spiel, man.
All right. Well, look, antiwar.com. Thank you, Ernie. Antiwar.com has been around since 1995. It was founded by Eric Garris, who's a plumb line libertarian. And its purpose originally was opposition to Clinton's interventions in the Balkans. Interventions meaning, you know, killing people. And Justin Raimondo, his friend, is our head writer, and I do the radio show there, and we have really great editors and people who basically scour every newspaper on earth all day, every day, and make sure, and the site is updated in real time all day, every day, of every breaking story you could possibly imagine of any import of international significance. And we have the very best in-house columnists that write for us, as well as we feature viewpoints from left, right, libertarian, and everybody else, whatever we can get. And there are even fights, as you know, within the libertarian movement, and we just pay those no mind, and we link to whoever's doing good work, and with emphasis on opposition to war and, of course, the domestic consequences of the war, particularly the police state, as it's being solidified around us. And so, you know, it's like, in fact, we sell that same bumper sticker, the rip-off version, not the original, at libertystickers.com. War is over if you want it. And, well, I forgot what I was going to say, another sticker. Libertarians stay anti-war when liberals are in power. That's one of our stickers there. And that's certainly true about antiwar.com is, you know, we're plumb line anti-state, and we're never going to change. It doesn't matter which administration is in power. And, you know, it's funny you talk about this cultural shift. There's a poll right now, news.antiwar.com. It's our top headline right now on antiwar.com, is that the polls are really shifting, and the American people are finally starting to oppose the war. But you know what the catch is, Ernie.
What?
Partisan politics. And check out this paragraph here. Americans are roughly split down the middle on their view of Obama's general foreign policy, oddly split down party lines. Odd because Afghanistan, President Obama's centerpiece foreign policy, is still surprisingly popular among Republicans, but overwhelmingly opposed among Democrats. Yet when the question shies away from mentioning Afghanistan and just mentions Obama, the split turns the opposite way, and the Democrats support Obama's foreign policy, the one that they oppose. And the Democrats oppose, and the Republican voters oppose Obama's foreign policy, the one that they support. It's war. And so the issue gets all confused. But that's the, you know, that's really what antiwar.com is for, is cutting through all that and saying, forget all that. You know, peace and liberty are not left-wing or right-wing issues. And, you know, really, come on, Ernie, in America, in our tradition, the best of conservatism means let's conserve the classical liberalism of the founding generation, the Declaration of Independence and the Bill of Rights. And let's make sure that no matter what changes come, we don't ever give up our Bill of Rights. I mean, that's the essence of good, true conservatism right there is, at the core, we all agree on those key principles, like in the Declaration and the Bill of Rights. And, you know, without those, we're lost. But with those, that's all we need, really. And, of course, peace is a big part of that. You can't have your Bill of Rights in a perpetual state of warfare. And every single I guess everybody but Hamilton, maybe even Hamilton conceded that freedom is impossible in a state of perpetual war. The founders of this country didn't even want us to have a standing army.
So we had a Republican.
We don't need to go on foreign adventures with a professional.
We have a Republican majority now came in, and a lot of it under this Tea Party thing and the Promise with America. And I read that Promise with America, and of course, it's brought out just as they did in 94, 6 weeks before the 94 election cycle, right, the midterm elections, right after the Ross Perot big woo-hoo. And then we have the Ron Paul revolution. We get to the midterm election. They do it again. It's instead of Contract on America, now it's a Promise with America. And in that promise, they were saying, oh, yeah, missile shield, support the troops, which means more money for military-industrial complex, and sanction, be in support of sanctions in Iran, not on Iran, not about Iran, not talking about or meeting, no, in Iran. And I'm going, wow, where did they get the chutzpah or the power and the influence to have that very phrase in there? So, I mean, even though we have a big change with all of these Republicans coming into Congress, are we really going to get the change that we're looking for? What do you think?
No, I think it's doubtful. You know, the Republican Party has always been committed to warfare. It was founded in warfare, and that's what it excels in. I mean, we condemn Woodrow Wilson for getting us into World War One, but if it was the Republicans, if they'd had their way, we'd have been in World War One the whole time. You know, that's all Theodore Roosevelt did all day long, was denounce Woodrow Wilson for not getting us into the war yet. You know, the history of the Republican Party is the history of piles of skulls everywhere, man. Ask the Filipinos. And so, no, that's not going to change. And I don't think, well, look, political power, the political conservatives, they're going to stay that kind of conservative. I like to believe that the story, as told by Justin Raimondo, for example, about how, hey, there's a lot of non-interventionist tradition on the right that ought to be harkened back to, that modern-day conservatives ought to be able to latch on to and identify with, you know, I like to believe that that can be affected. I don't know any reason why the typical kind of, you know, Jacksonian, right-wing, southern, pro-military type ought to not be a Jeffersonian peacenik type. I mean, it's Republic or Empire. Those are your choices.
Well, Dr. Paul made it clear that when you're coming into this next election cycle, it's just going to be economics. Where the empire will end, these wars will end, these bases will end, these occupations will end. It will end because we don't have a choice. We have a story up right now on the video screen. British defense chief, 30 to 40 years of Afghanistan occupation ahead on antiwar.com. You know, tell me, you know, the British are selling this or the people buying it?
Well, no, but I think, you know, the people of Britain have the same problem as the people of America. They're more or less opposed to this. But it's the last issue on their list or whatever, you know, domestic concerns, financial concerns. And since they always beat us over the head with this lie that war is good for the economy, every explanation in the world is proffered as to why we're all broke other than, hey, they blew trillions of dollars killing people in Iraq, for one, you know. And if they hadn't have blown that money, that might be the money that would be used to employ us or something like that, you know. The connection is not immediately obvious, and TV certainly never emphasizes it. And so, you know, what happens is people end up saying, well, we used to care a lot about the war, but right now we care mostly about our economic situation. And the idea, the connection between, you know, the F-35 fighter and their financial situation, you know, unless you beat them over the head with it, I guess they don't realize. So I guess that's me beating them over the head with it. That's why you're broke. They spent all your money on the war. They blew up a big bubble in order to make the war seem free, and now you're suffering through the correction, the Great Depression.
Oh, we're suffering. We're suffering, and the suffering, and more suffering to coming. Go to the freedomsummit.com website, freedomsummit.com, and make sure you check it out. Select student when you register. Come see Scott Horton at the freedomsummit.com. Hey, Scott, thanks for coming on, man. It's always a pleasure talking to you.
I always appreciate it, too.
We'll be right back here on Declare Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock, in just a little bit.